Hey, what's going on, people? Welcome to episode 25 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. I am Ryan, your host. On this podcast, I bring you music reviews from a music lover. Thank you all for joining me. Today, I am going to be reviewing new releases from David Byrne, August Green, Between the Buried and Me, and Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. All of these albums were released on March 9th. Before I get into the reviews, I'd just like to mention a couple of other albums that you should check out if you feel inclined to do so. There's a new Judas Priest record called Firepower. So any metalheads out there, anybody inclined to listen to metal, check that one out. There's also a new record from the Fratellis. That's F-R-A-T-E-L-L-I-S, the Fratellis. A record called In Your Own Sweet Time. That's another good one to check out. Also, there's a new record from Albert Hammond Jr. called Francis Trouble. That's worth checking out as well. So why don't we go ahead and get into the reviews for today. So the first album that I would like to review is the new David Byrne record, which is called American Utopia. So David Byrne, a former frontman for the Talking Heads, returns with his first solo album since 2004's Grown Backwards. Now, you know, personally, as someone who had always found Byrne intriguing as part of the Talking Heads, but hadn't really ventured much into his solo material, I had hoped that American Utopia would really wow me, presenting the work of, you know, another sort of elder statesman in the wake of fallen icons like Leonard Cohen and David Bowie. But unfortunately, American Utopia is largely, it feels like a half-hearted affair. It feels rushed and it feels uninspired much of the time. So many of the songs have cookie-cutter structures, like the opening song, which is called I Dance Like This. With its odd combination of folky piano backdrop verses and electronic choruses with a robotic Bowie-esque vocal, it really feels threadbare and insubstantial. And it's not the best tone to set for an album, but it is an appropriate tone given the material. Here's a sample of the first single from the album called Everybody's Coming to My House. Imagine looking at a picture. Imagine driving in a car. Imagine rolling down the window. Imagine opening the door. Everybody's coming to my house. So the album continues in much the same fashion with these sort of endless peaks and valleys. The track Gasoline and Dirty Sheets redeems Byrne somewhat after the opener, with just enough lyrical wit and musical variety. But it's not until close to the end of the album that things become truly interesting. You know, along the way, there's some bright choruses like the one on the track Every Day is a Miracle that, you know, may catch a listener's ear. But there's so many uninteresting stretches between these small islands of inspiration, and it makes for a very uneven road. Byrne turns in both some interesting vignettes of songs, like the track Bullet, which tells the story of a bullet traveling through a man's body, but also some tiresome ones as well, like the track Dog's Mind, which sounds at times like a nursery rhyme, one which the 65-year-old Byrne can't really pull off. Even when he injects some Talking Heads quirkiness into the mix, which is most evident on the chorus of the track, It's Not Dark Up Here, to me it feels cheap rather than nostalgic. By the time a listener gets to the track Everybody's Coming to My House, of which you heard a sample earlier, and which is the penultimate song on the record, so much time has been spent on this roller coaster ride, you know, of an album, that this song's dynamics might, you know, slip right by a listener upon their first, you know, dive into the album. It wasn't until my third listen through of the album that I began to realize, you know, how much more emotion comes through in the performances on this track. It's one of the few times on the album when Byrne steps away from, you know, the Cohen-isms and the Bowie-isms, and he really carries, he carries this sort of newfound individuality, you know, in his vocals, right through the closing track, which is called Here. It's sort of this anthemic yet tender track, and he finishes, you know, on a positive note, and it will remind a listener that he is quite capable as a songwriter. But the fact that, you know, you have to spend, you know, 8 or 9 songs getting to this point where the album truly becomes interesting, that that's just really disappointing. It's a head-scratching moment for me. I mean, how did Brian Eno and David Byrne believe this to be a finished product? I just don't get it, but stranger things have happened. So overall, American Utopia seems like a missed opportunity, especially since it's been so long since Byrne has released an album on his own. You know, this is a strange album in that most of its songs, you know, follow rigid song structures musically, while at the same time, you know, lyrically, Byrne gets as fanciful as ever, just creating this very strange collection of tracks that feel stilted. The overall effect is just that this strangeness hamstrings the album. And if not for the last two songs on the record, it would be a complete wash for me. I really hope Byrne gets back on the horse the next time around, because he's certainly one of popular music's most eccentric and interesting characters. And he's had some success in the recent past working with more current artists like Saint Vincent on 2012's record Love This Giant, and also Fatboy Slim on a concept record from 2010 called Here Lies Love. You know, perhaps collaboration of this sort is what Byrne now needs to really keep the fire stoked. I guess only time will tell. So I gave American Utopia a rating of 6 out of 10. Okay, so moving on to the next record I'd like to talk about today. It is a self-titled record from the sort of hip-hop slash jazz supergroup August Greene. Now, I've always been a fan of Chicago rapper Common. And when I found out that he collaborated on a new record with Robert Glasper, who's a Grammy-winning pianist acclaimed for his solo work, as well as collaborations with artists like Mos Def, Q-Tip, and Kendrick Lamar. I mean, really, the list is a mile long if you search for it. And also, that Common collaborated on this album with a guy named Kareem Riggins, who's a jazz drummer and a producer who's worked with artists like The Roots, Erykah Badu, and Kanye West. It piqued my interest, for sure. Now, Riggins and Common have a history of working together in a band called A Black Girl Named Becky, as well as some other collaborations. And this trio of Common, Glasper, and Riggins collaborated with singer Bilal on a song called Letter to the Free, which was featured in the 2016 Netflix documentary 13th, directed by Ana DuVernay. The track netted the trio a Primetime Emmy Award, and since this new project seemed to be a self-contained jazz-influenced hip-hop album in a similar vein to the track Letter to the Free, I couldn't stay away. Before I get into reviewing the record, I should let listeners know that this record, unlike pretty much all of the records that I reviewed so far this year, is an Amazon exclusive that you won't find, at least I couldn't find it at the time I recorded this episode, on any other music services such as iTunes or Spotify. So it's an Amazon exclusive. Now, as I'm going to discuss, I don't think this record is anywhere near perfect, but I definitely think it is worth giving a listen, and if you are a fan of Common and or jazz-influenced hip-hop, I'd say it's, you know, it's worth your $9 or $10. Here is a sample of the album's second track, which is called Black Kennedy. Some of these leaders are feral, like, let the people go so they can face the east and grow. Time for everything, everything is seasonal. I dreamed enough, everything is believable, it's feasible. If I was a Kennedy, I'd be a black Kennedy. Black car, black tux, this is black symmetry. Raised in the shot on my family from Tennessee. I remember me, Reem Dilla, we was in the D. Riding through the city with the top down. We ain't got no ceilings to our thoughts now. It's a beautiful ride. Okay, so the first half of this record plays out much in the way that anyone familiar with Common and piano-driven jazzy hip-hop production would expect. The opening track, which is called Meditation, with its down-tempo beat, cascading piano flourishes, and warm synth glow, sounds like an awakening, and Common's flow, which early on in the track matches the beat perfectly, and then accelerates as the track continues, sort of reinforces this image of rising from a slumber. And the second track, Black Kennedy, which you just heard a sample of, is a deceptively simple slice of life tune that really shows the confidence these three individuals have in their abilities and, you know, the memorability of the song's hook, which often gets stuck in my brain for hours on end. A piano interlude concludes this track, leading into the next track, which is called Let Go, a song which has some haunting guitar and piano passages, as well as this really odd stuttering beat. And Common's flow reaches some pretty acrobatic levels on the next track, which is called Practice, and his rhymes really outshine, you know, the melodic vocals on the track, which for the first time on this record so far, you know, feel repetitive and a little tired. On the next track, which is called Fly Away, the production finds some more organic sounding percussion, along with some flute and some string accompaniment, which gives the song an appropriately ethereal, airy feel. A tribal beat leads the listener into the next track, which is called Aya, that's A-Y-A, which turns up the jazz, leaving a listener in a sort of limbo, you know, without Common's vocals to sort of keep the track grounded. I wouldn't have minded this, you know, this sudden shift so much if this track weren't immediately followed by a track called Piano Interlude, on which Common repeats some of the lines that begin the album, you know, over this just sort of wandering piano riff. You know, here the album really starts on a path to losing me, and, you know, the punchiness of the next track, which is called No Apologies, really seems like a big curveball this far into the record. You know, this is where the sequencing of the album gets strange. No Apologies, you know, to my mind, should have appeared somewhere earlier on the album. You know, not only would its energy have picked up the front half of the record significantly, but it also would have established the presence of, you know, sort of loose instrumental experimentation early on the record. And the next track, which is called The Time, is a pretty solid marriage of the album's contrasting styles, with a female vocal adding another emotional layer to the overall picture. This is also something that could have been done earlier on the record, you know, to make it feel more cohesive. The next track, which is called Optimistic, featuring vocals from Brandy, is easily the most out of place song on this record. It hardly even seems like a collaboration, since Brandy, you know, dominates the track until about 3 minutes in, you know, when Common suddenly appears, and then, you know, fades away almost as quickly. The whole thing feels like a remix of a Brandy song, and in all honesty, I think it could have been left off the album. So, how does August Green wrap up this album after, you know, losing the narrative for a few tracks? Sadly, not strongly or concisely. The last track is a 12-minute exploratory, you know, jazz slash boom bap hip hop odyssey called Swisha Suite, as in S-U-I-T-E, Suite, on which Glasper and Riggins, they seem more interested in sort of throwing as many different instrumental pieces at the wall as possible, as well as some odd vocal ramblings that come in and out of the mix, you know, just to see what will stick. I really have no idea what made them think this was the right choice. The two could have easily broken, you know, this monster of a track up into pieces and used them as segues and interludes throughout the album. I actually think that the drum-heavy, you know, hard-hitting instrumentation would have contrasted the laid-back vibes of the record's first half pretty nicely. And nearly 10 minutes into the proceedings, Common appears to deliver, you know, one more fiery verse, but by this point, I almost don't care about what he's saying because I'm so bewildered by, you know, the track itself. So this whole affair is concluded by about a minute of, you know, what sounds like a jazz band finishing up the last song of their set. And it's hard not to feel as if I'm listening to a completely different album than I was listening to when the opening track started. This is a trio that's incredibly talented and well-versed in various genres of music. And I can only hope that if they collaborate again, they're able to make the pieces fit together more solidly. So I gave the self-titled record from August Green a rating of 7 out of 10. And moving on, the next record I would like to talk about today is the new record from Between the Buried and Me. It's called Automata Part 1. It's the first part of a two-part record, two-part concept record, and this first part is about 35 minutes long, so I'm guessing that the second part will probably be around the same length, you know, making about an 80-minute album, probably, which isn't too far off for your typical Between the Buried and Me record, but anyway, just a note from here on out, I am going to refer to Between the Buried and Me as BT Bam, in the interests of brevity. So, all right. So back in 2007, when a good friend of mine introduced me to progressive metal band BT Bam by recommending their then recently released album Colors, I was quite simply floored by the band's ability to compose a record that was simultaneously, you know, labyrinthine in composition, far-ranging in scope as far as genre inclusion, and also instantly memorable. And as I delved deeper into the band's catalog, I found their earlier records, such as Alaska and The Silent Circus, to be solid precursors to the sort of fever-painting, you know, epicness of Colors. The band had also recorded an album of cover songs, which was called The Anatomy Of, you know, which really helped to inform so much of BT Bam's influence from, you know, bands such as Queen, Pink Floyd, Smashing Pumpkins, Faith No More, etc. All of this research made for a great jumping off point for me, and for the next 7 or 8 years, the band continued to wow me, you know, with slight fluctuations in the quality of their material. You know, they may have stumbled here and there, but they never fell. And their last studio album, which was 2015's Coma Ecliptic, found the band really embracing the proggier aspects of their sound, you know, even more fully than before, to the acclaim of critics, you know, and a good portion of their fan base as well. I have to confess that after the release of Coma Ecliptic, I began to wonder how long BT BAM would be able to keep this head of steam rolling. After all, on Colors, they had pulled so many tricks from their sleeve that many wondered if they could keep pace with themselves after its release. So here we are in 2018, nearly 11 years after the release of Colors, and BT BAM still have gas in their tank. Their newest release, Automata Part 1, is the first half of a concept album about a voyeuristic future in which one man's dreams become a world's entertainment. Frontman Tommy Rogers had this to say about the concept in a press release. "What if dreams could be broadcast for the purpose of entertainment? Could you consume the innermost thoughts of another person on screen? If you could, what does that say about an attention-starved audience? More importantly, what would become of the dreamer?" End of quote. And Rogers also elaborated on the concept during an interview with That Drummer Guy, saying, "The protagonist in the story, his dreams are broadcast over the entire world as a form of entertainment, and because of this, he is taken advantage of by a company called Voice of Trespass. It follows one of his dreams where he is searching for a family that he's lost. All those different aspects of the story, you know, and deals with a lot of his personal well-being, corruption, depression, the audience's perspective on the whole thing. It showcases his life in a way and things that he deals with." End of quote. So Rogers and company are clearly still interested in telling compelling stories, but does the music keep up with the fantastic concept? Before I get into it, here's a sample from the album's fourth track, which is called Millions. Okay, so Automata 1 kicks off with the track Condemned to the Gallows, a nearly 7-minute song that could have come off of Coma Ecliptic with its sci-fi rock opera feel. The band don't really offer anything new here, preferring to ease the listener into the new record. This is a move that makes sense. BT BAM have never been the type of band to throw listeners a curveball right away, although the, you know, Queen-esque track Foamborn, the backtrack from Colors, is pretty close to a curveball, I'd say. So Condemned to the Gallows segues into a track called House Organ, which is a shorter song at about 3 minutes that serves as a bridge between Gallows and the album's next track, Yellow Eyes. The band did something similar to this on Coma Ecliptic, with a track called Dim Ignition. But whereas Dim Ignition was fairly robotic and repetitive, not necessarily in a bad way, House Organ gradually ratchets up the tension that's established by its frantic intro, eventually breaking wide open with Rogers and the band spending most of the rest of the track sounding, you know, more tender than abrasive, which leads perfectly into Yellow Eyes. Yellow Eyes begins with the sort of driving drums and syncopated guitar chugging that the band tends to fall back on, and it calls to mind much of the material that was on the two Parallax releases. That was the Parallax Hypersleep Dialogues and the Parallax Future Sequence. That was a sort of a two-part concept that BT Bam told over the course of, I'd say, like an album and a half's worth of material. Hypersleep Dialogues was only about 30 minutes long, and then Future Sequence was average, you know, length for a BT Bam record. So now, interestingly enough, Yellow Eyes goes in a couple of, you know, surprising directions. At one point, it slows down, you know, and morphs into a, you know, an acoustic guitar-driven tune. And it also delves into the realm of jazz fusion at times, perhaps as a result of bassist Dan Briggs's recent work in the transatlantic supergroup known as Nova Collective. This type of experimentation makes Yellow Eyes a highlight of the album, and the acoustic touches set up the next track beautifully. So the next track, which is called Millions, of which you heard a sample earlier, is perhaps ironically both the album's most interesting track while simultaneously being its least progressive track, at least from a technical standpoint. Its guitars take the lead from the lighter sections of Yellow Eyes and really just run with it. Roger's vocals are for the most part understated, never really entering growl or scream territory, more working in tandem with the music to create a reflective, atmospheric experience that showcases a side of BT Bam that it's easy to forget about, you know, amidst the sweeping guitar solos and shifting time signatures. I hope that this part of the band's personality is explored even more on Automata Part 2. And Millions is followed by a short instrumental track that's more of an interlude that's called Gold Distance. And it serves as an introduction to the final track on the album, the 10.5 minute track, Blot, as in B-L-O-T, Blot. Now, BT Bam are known for epic closing tracks. You know, one has to look no further than the 15-minute masterpiece known as White Walls from the album Colors. Now, in this fan's humble opinion, none of the long-playing climax pieces on their subsequent records have equaled White Walls, though they've come close, and they're always interesting and diverse enough musically to, you know, warrant the long runtime. Blot is really no different. It shapeshifts enough to keep from getting repetitive, you know, or dull, and it explores a sound that the band has only touched on sparingly in the past. A Far Eastern vibe comes immediately from the track's opening, with Rogers intoning sort of like a Tibetan monk, an instrumentation to match, you know, bongos and sitar-like strings swirling around, you know, his chant. What I like very much about Blot is that it never diverts far from that main theme, even when it's at its heaviest. This is one manner in which the band have definitely evolved since an album like Colors. You know, instead of throwing everything in the kitchen sink in, the band focus on crafting the most, you know, the most cohesive song they can, even when it pushes far past the length of your average song, you know, metal or otherwise. So since this is only part one of Automata, I'm really curious to see how part two is structured, given the length of Blot. You know, will it act as a sort of centerpiece if one puts the two parts together? I guess I probably shouldn't get ahead of myself. Part two is expected to be released during the summer, and much like a good cliffhanger, part one has me quite intrigued for what's to come. BT Bam should be very proud of their longevity, and hopefully they don't hit the bottom of their creative well anytime soon. So I gave the record Automata Part 1 a rating of 7.5 out of 10. Okay, so the last record that I'd like to talk about today, and my personal pick for this episode, is the new record from Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats, record which is called Tearing at the Seams. So Nathaniel Ratliff, a veteran of the bands Born in the Flood and also a previous solo incarnation known as Nathaniel Ratliff and the Wheel, returns with his second album of vintage rock and roll and soul with his newest band, the Night Sweats. After gaining some success with both of his previous acts, Ratliff finds a space, you know, on the middle of the spectrum between Born in the Floods, you know, upbeat rock, and the Wheels, more somber folk. Tearing at the Seams is vintage rock and soul, much in a similar fashion to the band Alabama Shakes. As a matter of fact, Ratliff's newest album reminded me over and over of Alabama Shakes' debut record, which was called Boys and Girls. Here's a sample of one of Tearing at the Seams' singles, a track called You Worry Me. My name anyway, am I crazy or the wind is gonna blow me down? I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry. I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry up. I'm gonna leave it all out there. So straight out of the gate, Ratliff and Company let a listener know what they're in for on the track Shoe Boot, with a drum beat that will definitely make hip-hop producers everywhere stop what they're doing and listen. And all the bells and whistles associated with vintage American rhythm and blues. Ratliff sounds, at least to my mind, like what Ronnie Van Zant from Lynyrd Skynyrd would have sounded like if he had grown old and smoked a billion cigarettes, you know, with some Sam Cooke sprinkled on for good measure. Like any true rhythm and blues band worth their salt, the Night Sweats know how to complement each other and therein construct a great song. The organ and brass flourishes, the pedal steel and slide guitar touches all create this lush sonic garden that Ratliff can till without having to add, you know, much flash to his vocals. Synergy like this is a special thing, and the band roll through several great tracks without missing a beat, you know, from the Unrequited Love number, Be There, to the, you know, Mother's Tough Love, Kick in the Pants track, Hey Mama. Female vocal duo Lucius lend backup vocals to the track Babe I Know, which is a nice marriage of the Night Sweat sound and also the type of folk that Ratliff, you know, played in his previous incarnation. The lyrics deal with resignation and, to a degree, wayward love, and they help to make the song a fitting end to the first half of Tearing at the Seams. Now, the second half of the record ramps up the action on a track which is called Intro, on which it sounds like the band, just tired and ragged from their first set in a nightclub somewhere, took some quote-unquote magic pills and found their second wind. It really makes for a great middle point in the record, just re-energizing it in just foot-stomping, roof-rattling fashion. You know, James Brown at the Triple Rock in the Blues Brothers fashion. Lucius actually returned to sing backup again on the next track, which is called Coolin' Out. And it's not hard to tell that Ratliff and his band are sort of following the same formula on the second half that they did, you know, on the first half of the record. It's not a bad or even surprising move, really. After all, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There's a slightly higher sense of urgency on these latter tunes, I think, especially on the track Baby, I Lost My Way. Now, the sort of climactic track, which is called You Worry Me, which I played you a sample earlier, works as this pulsing, driving climax of a track with just a soaring chorus and a beautifully simple but effective guitar riff. And then the next track, which is called Still Out There Running, and the closing title track, Fine Ratliff, channeling his inner Sam Cooke now. And it sounds as if, you know, the end of the night has been reached and everyone in the band is sort of exhausted but content in a job well done. This album really is a shining statement on the part of a songwriter and a band who are intent on playing from the heart. And, you know, if they can keep their sound fresh and exciting like it is on this record, on Tearing at the Seams, they should garner a lot of praise and success, and I hope they do. So I gave the record Tearing at the Seams a rating of 8 out of 10. Okay, so that wraps up my reviews for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure if you, anyone out there who's listening, if you haven't joined the Radio Live Transmission Facebook community, please do so. We have a lot of fun on there, and I welcome music of all types, from all walks of life, from any country that produces music, I would like to hear it. Doesn't matter where you come from, I want to hear whatever you have to bring to the table. So please go on Facebook, search, you know, the name of the podcast, Radio Live Transmission, and you should find us on the Facebook group there, and please join. And also, please join me for the next episode, which will be episode 26, on which I will be reviewing new releases from the Decemberists, Mount Eerie, Hot Snakes, and Michelle Ndegeocello. I think I said that correctly. I'll have plenty of more chances, so anyway. Again, thank you guys for listening. This is Ryan for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, signing off. Have a great day.